Okay. I introduced myself before. My name is Kara. I'm a coordinator in the Faculty of Education and Psychology here at the University of Jyväskylä. And I'm really happy to present this panel today, which we've tied in with a publication called Finland's Famous Education System: Unvarnished Insights into Finnish Schooling. And we have here on our panel today some of the co-authors, the many co-authors who contributed to this volume. And I'd like to remind you as well that on the house space, we have all of their detailed information, as well as the book, which is an open access publication, so all of it can be freely downloaded. And the different articles, three here today, that these co-authors contributed to the volume. Maybe before we do a round of introductions, I should say that I was really interested when I saw this book come out, not only because I work in the Finnish education system, but specifically because for the last 2 years, I've been co-teaching a course called Finnish Education in Practice. And the aim of this course is to give a broad overview of the Finnish education system and to look at some of the theory, some of the practice, advantages, disadvantages, and involves things like not just being in the classroom and looking at the theory, but also going into different educational settings and visiting and trying to observe and see what's going on. Okay, everyone can hear now. Excellent. And teaching this course has been an interesting experience for me because I've been in the Finnish higher education system for almost a decade now, but I did not have my basic education in the Finnish system. And so, in the process of teaching this course and myself reflecting on my own education, it's been a really interesting meta-reflection for me about what Finnish education is. And I think a timely arrival of this book, and also very timely for our conference today, and some of the things that Heidi and others mentioned this morning about the hype of Finnish education and the fame of the Finnish education system. So, let's do a round of introductions then, shall we? Taina, would you like to begin by introducing yourself?
Thanks, Kara. Hi, I'm Taina Saarinen. I'm sometimes a higher education researcher, sometimes a language researcher. It kind of depends on the audience, I guess. I'm also at the moment the research professor of higher education and director of the Finnish Institute for Educational Research, which kind of gives me a really nice place to look at Finnish education from different perspectives. So, yeah, thank you.
Hi everybody, this is working. My name is Johanna Enzakananen. I'm an associate professor of English in the language department here, language and communication studies department. Although that's probably a bit misleading because my interest is more in multicultural and multilingual education. And I've just been counting. I think I have enjoyed, if you count study abroad, five different education systems or six. I have to count again. I think. It's very difficult. But yeah, so I'm happily chatting about anything in connection with language, justice, education, knowledges, and things like that.
Thank you. My name is Mira Kalalahti. I'm Associate Professor of Guidance here at Jyväskylä. My field is probably kind of mixture of different issues, but perhaps in this panel, I think I wanted to bring some sociological perspective, perhaps youth studies. That's one of my fields. I also study and write about education politics and policies, but I think that's not the issue here today. So something about intersectionality in migrant students' educational trajectories, or perhaps something about social justice and youth perspectives. So let's discuss those issues.
Hello, I am Niina Mykrä. I am postdoctoral researcher in the Finnish Institute for Educational Research, and I am in a team called Eco-social sustainability and education, and we are having multiple projects on that issue. And my doctoral dissertation was about sustainable development at schools in primary school and comprehensive school in Finland. And nowadays, my research is about sustainability competencies in larger scale, like also in higher education.
Thank you, everyone, for the introductions. I wanted us to maybe have some questions already submitted online to the house space. So you can submit online, and there will be plenty of opportunity, of course, to ask your questions today. But I thought we might start off by focusing a little bit on your specific contributions to this very large volume. But before I do that, maybe an opening statement, so to speak, if we could have a round of an opening statement, because when you read the preface of this book, the editors of the book start with an interesting sentence. They say, as the editors of this substantial book, we see it as a response to the overexcited and misleading views of Finnish education. A very provocative statement. So I'd like to hand it to our panelists now, if you would like to expand on that, or perhaps even comment on how it came about that you contributed to this book.
Okay, thanks. I remember when the editors contacted us, and I guess Hannah and I were talking about the proposal and said that, okay, this is the book that we have been wanting to read about Finnish education. So I guess for us it was self-evident that we wanted to be part of writing that. And looking back now, it's I think we could have been even more radical, actually.
Yeah, it's, we can be now.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, yeah, it was, I think it was exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we write about language and the ways in which language education or education and language have a lot of room for improvement in Finland, that often prides itself as being this wonderful multilingual country where many languages are spoken. And I could give a long theoretical problematization of that idea now, but instead I'm going to ask you something. How many of you speak an indigenous or endangered language and feel that this process of learning the language and speaking the language is well supported by the Finnish system and society? Raise your hand if that's true for you. Yeah. So so unless every single hand in this room is raised, we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I have a couple of chapters in the book, and the other one is about taking a critical stance on the educational system. But this one, the other article is about young people and the intersectionality of their life courses within the comprehensive education. So we wanted to address the issue of intersectionality, like from the youth's perspective, what it takes and what does it mean to study in comprehensive education in Finland if you lack, for instance, the Finnish skills, or if you don't have parents that have been studying in Finland, and what kind of issues it means. So we were just finalizing our four-year research project called Transit, and we followed 400 students from comprehensive education to the end of upper secondary education. And we wanted to tell three stories of those young people, and that's the chapter in the book.
My story with this book started when they contacted me in the late phase of the process of the book, when they realized that ecological sustainability was missing altogether from the book. And I was just finished, I has just finished my dissertation about this ecological sustainability at schools, and my dissertation looks at the thing from different level, from policies level and then curriculum, and then also from the level what happens at the schools. So I had quite large dissertation, and I think that tells a lot about the situation when this was the thing that they didn't realize at the first, that ecological sustainability is something that should be in the book too.
Speaking of sustainability, Nina and I were actually talking about this during the break, and I'd like to open it up to the other panelists as well. How do you view sustainability? Because Nina's already just been talking about, for example, ecological sustainability, and how does that relate to the work that you've contributed? And maybe if you can incorporate this as well to teacher education, because all of you, I think, have aspects of sustainability and teacher education that interconnect your work. Nina, would you like to begin?
Yeah, I would like to begin. I have some... when I have been working in NGO before, and we had we have been joining in many seminars, for example, from Ministry of Education and National Board of Education, and many times in these situations, those administrative persons have said that, oh, we don't talk now about this environmental education because we are always talking about it. And then they want to lead the talking to social sustainability. But when I looked at those documents about sustainability, there are much more about social sustainability in these official documents than from the ecological sustainability point of view. So there is kind of misthinking that always we are talking about ecological things, but really we are talking more about social things. We don't call them maybe sustainability, but including these fairness and democracy and everything like that goes under this social sustainability.
Yeah, I think I can continue and agree on that, that the social justice approach that I've been using is more about social sustainability. But of course, if you look at teacher training, I think teacher education needs to take the issue of sustainability as a key concept to bring that to schools and discuss on what is the sustainability and what kind of definitions and what kind of dimensions and phenomena it takes, and that's what we have been doing in social justice. But yeah, that's my definition more.
Yeah, I mean, I think one easy answer would be now that we need a theory and practice of language sustainability. I think fundamentally we don't care enough about most languages in this world, and so the way we teach and promote language learning in this country is unfortunately following very much a global order. Colonial order, sorry, but I don't even want to talk about this right now. I want to go somewhere a bit more experimental with my thinking now, challenging myself. And you can then think that I'm completely off, but that's okay. So I wonder, like, what is even language, and what do we even sustain when we think about sustainability? Because so I have a question again to you. Have you ever talked to an animal, like your pet, or? Okay. Do you feel like they answer? Okay. Have you ever talked to a plant? Okay. Do you feel like they answer? Hey, you're my people. Okay, great. So we could play. Okay. So then my question, if we think that we can talk to our natural world, which I completely think so. I have talked to trees since I was a child. Then first of all, this has to change what we think language is. And second of all, if we don't protect those beings that are not humans, we are losing interlocutors. We're losing our partners in conversation. So I think language can be, and the way we think about language can be actually very much not about social sustainability, but about natural sustainability. We need to protect the beings that we talk to, including humans, but not only humans. Okay, closer to mic. Got it. I'm a small person.
I can't really top that. So I'll just say that I think what we often don't talk about when we talk about sustainability is ethical issues and sort of maybe also aesthetic issues. We are very much concerned with what knowledge and data do in our world and do to our sustainability, but we forget to talk about ethical issues and values. And I think that's something that I would like to just think more about.
I think we might continue with a couple more themes, and then I hope there are some questions and comments and more discussion that can happen with the audience. One thing that I noticed as I was reading through all of your articles was that there was this kind of connection in the way that the curriculum was discussed and how teachers use the curriculum or interact with the curriculum. And we talked this morning, for example, in the opening about the high level of autonomy that teachers have in the Finnish education system. And I think you've also discussed to some extent in all of your articles the idea of teacher autonomy and how this perhaps has some advantageous elements and some disadvantageous elements. Could you comment a little bit further on this perhaps?
Diana, you need to go first on this one. Sorry. Go, I think you have something to say.
Okay. No, I was actually thinking about, and I don't know if this is what you were thinking about, but autonomy is kind of tricky because we like to think that autonomy is good, that we need to be autonomous and institutions need to be autonomous. The problem with autonomy is that it also leaves so much for the individual institution, and it misses so much big structural issues that may be overlooked if the individual or institutional autonomy is all. So I think I'm kind of like I'm not going to say that teachers should not be autonomous, but I'm going to say that there are big problems with the ways in which we understand autonomy. I don't know if that was what you
I can illustrate with an example. So I have three children. When it's a cold winter day, I like to think that my children have some autonomy over their decisions. I give them the choice if they want to wear the yellow mittens or the blue mittens. I do not give them the choice about whether they want to wear mittens or not. And I think the same is true for teacher autonomy. We can ask them which social justice aspect they would like to focus on this year, but we cannot give them the choice of whether or not they want to focus on a social justice issue. So that kind of autonomy. Yes.
Yeah, well, yeah, I came to think also about the autonomy, and I have been, for instance, analyzing the social space and social justice. This one is. Let's see.
You can hold it.
There we go. Yeah. Okay. Is it now fine? Yeah. So, in social justice and social space thinking that I have been using and analyzing in my studies, we think that the people bring their life stories into the space. And if there are only the autonomous teacher in the class that is supposed to recognize all the stories that come into the place, it lacks the other stories too. So I think that we need to also talk about peers and all other actors in the social spaces, in the classrooms in practice. So it means that that if we give too much power to the teachers and too much autonomous, then we lack the other stories in the classroom. And that is how we have been discussing about social space in social justice approach.
In my study, I interviewed about 50 teachers and asked about what should be done at schools about this environmental sustainability, I found this kind of dilemma that they said that there should be more steering from upwards, but then they said they don't want anyone to steer them. Somebody said it in the same sentence even, but when I analyzed these two were very strong aspects. So there are many kinds of dilemmas at school like this, that same time they are pro and then con things. And I think our steering documents like curriculum and those other steering documents from administration, they leave too much space for teachers to choose, like they said. There should be some kind of more visual, more straight things that you should teach this environmental sustainability to. If somebody is not interested in that at all, they could skip it nearly wholly because it's not so clearly there. But maybe cooperation between teachers at schools could be the answer because different teachers has different focuses, and when they work together, they like learn from each other, and they can keep this own autonomy, and maybe this shared professionalism is something they should have. So work together and develop their autonomy together, not alone in their own classes without hearing anything from each other.
I'd like to see now if we can open it up to the audience a bit and have some questions, some comments, some interaction back and forth. Would anyone like to begin? Yeah, I see a hand up. Can we pass the mic up to the back, please?
Hi. My question is again about the autonomy that we discuss with it should come maybe with boundaries, but then who decides about the choices that needs to be given and as per what grounds and criteria? And if the conflicts arise, then who is going to solve the problems and conflicts and how? So this is what I'm wondering about. Thank you.
Maybe I start.
Please.
In Finland, this curriculum is kind of the basic document that everybody should obey at schools. And it's negotiated between very many different organs. So there are teachers' opinions and administrative opinions and statements from research, for example. And maybe this negotiation process is important, that you negotiate which are the borders which you should teach. I think it's good that we have this kind of document which is common to everybody. So it gives the borders, but it shouldn't be too strict. There must be autonomy in it, but have these borders, as you said, that was a good word for it, some kind of borders. What kind of things about sustainability and ecological sustainability too you should have in your teaching?
I think we could also think of this question. I think it was a really good question, so thank you. I think you could also think about it, who is currently writing the curriculum and who is not. And so what if the curriculum writers was a diverse group of people who represented, for example, the communities that immigrate to Finland, or the communities that are indigenous to Finland, or the communities that are minoritized in Finland, or people who have not always been educators or worked in education, but have, you know, more complicated professional trajectories, or maybe people who have not had the opportunity to go to school or have interrupted schooling trajectories, or people with disabilities, or people, you know, I could go on and on and on. But what if those were the people who write our curricula, you know? I think they would maybe look a bit different, and maybe also some things would be the same, you know? But I think it starts there. And that's one answer. And is to your question, what about if problems come up? Well, I think it would depend on what kind of problem that is, but I think these things always need to be renegotiated, right? We can never put anything in place that is a forever curriculum or forever policy. But I think it would be good to have a space where these things are regularly discussed and renewed by a very diverse group of people.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree too. And I can perhaps add that if you if you listen to the sociologist perspective on curriculum, they would probably say that it's written by white middle class teachers. And for instance, the cultures and the languages and the image of the student that is written in the curriculum, it's for middle class families, for students who are doing well at school. So it promotes some kind of identity for the students which are not familiar for all the families. And for instance, like the cultures or the hobbies or the things that families do at homes, which are appreciated in the curriculum text, they are from Finnish middle class families. But that's only it's a strict way to think about the curriculum, but it's there. So yeah, we need more diversity in the curriculum text.
Could I put a little anecdote in there? I remember visiting a Finnish school, and this is one of the first Finnish schools that I visited, and they were talking about, the teacher was saying, okay, now we have sport or PE and we're going skiing. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, so do they have the skiing equipment at the school, or does everyone bring their own? And the teacher said, oh, well, everyone has their own skiing equipment. And I said, really? Like everyone? And the teacher was very kind of adamant, oh, yes, everyone has it. Like they can't possibly not have it. And I was thinking, surely there must be someone who doesn't have skis or for various reasons, like the things that you were mentioning. But it was this interesting little interlude. And I think maybe we've all had these types of interludes as teachers, as students, as people who are studying and education, who are invested in education. So yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that just popped into my head, and please do continue.
I really just had a quick comment on actually what Mira was saying. I remember we were writing either this article, Hanna, or the spin-off from this article, and we talked about there being this political concern in Finland about our curriculum and our teachers homogenizing or being like, we say tasapäistä. What's the word in English? We evening out everybody into the same model somehow. So there seems to be this concern that our curriculum is making everybody the same, but nobody's concerned about the teachers being the same, which is very much still a thing. And I think that's one of the, like, we are very concerned about students, but not about the teachers. So I think I absolutely agree.
And I think, if I can also, I think actually your story was really lovely, because I think this happens every day and all the time. And I think the more we can see these things, the more we will be able to see that this norm that we are upholding, nobody actually really corresponds to this, right? So like we have this very strong white Eurocentric middle class norm, but there are actually very few people, or no people, I would like to say even, who live that life. Like everybody deviates from this norm in some way. Everybody has some ways in which they do not fulfill this norm. And for some, it's more visible and for others not. But in the end, this norm is oppressive to everybody. So I think the more work we can do to undermine this norm, the better for everyone. I really think that. That, like, if you think about it, okay, if you think about your family or your friends or your relatives, your children that you know, like, in what ways do they actually not have the skis, so to speak, as a metaphor, right? I'm sure you can come up with many things.
I see a hand. And there's a microphone coming.
How about now?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, great. I want to continue digging in on this, reaching out to underrepresented groups within the curriculum. I know the curriculum is revisited relatively often. What are the mechanisms that exist now to reach out to people that are traditionally underrepresented? And then, as a follow-up, how does that play into the differing demographics across Finland? If we're saying that we can't make everybody the same, even if that's the Finnish ideal, does it make sense for the same things to be embedded within the curriculum within the different contexts, right? Helsinki is different from Jyväskylä, is different from, Åland, which I don't know if they actually follow the same curriculum or not, is different from Rovaniemi. So how is that thought about, and how could we improve those outreach efforts also?
Oh, that's a good question.
It seems to me that there's quite a lot of hearing of different groups at the moment, but the thing is that the groups reproduce themselves. Like, it's the same people asking from the same people, being told the same. And I think that's the thing that could be expanded. And I think that's what Mira was talking about earlier, that we need, and Hanna too. So there is a lot of hearing at the moment, but it's very much reproducing itself, the group of people. That would be my understanding of the process.
I would like to expand this a bit more. Our curriculum is missing also other voices, like voices of more than people. So where is the viewpoint of nature and animals and trees and so on? So it's very human-centered, our curriculum, and that should be changed too.
100%. And maybe I should say that, like, I think some standardization is also, I think, can be also a really good thing. So I think in some ways, the fact that whether our kids go to school in Helsinki or in Inari, and we can be relatively certain that if, for example, they change schools or there is some continuity, that's not necessarily always a bad thing. So I think in some to some degree, I speak also from the perspective of somebody who was a parent in the US, and choosing a school there is like was for me, I should speak for myself, a total nightmare. But in Finland, I did not have this pressure as a parent because I was relatively sure wherever my kids go to school, it's going to be more or less the same thing, like in good and in bad. And but I know this is also not entirely true like that. Like we have actually a selection and segregation also in the Finnish school system, but it's not. It's a bit cushioned through the national curriculum, I think, the effect. I do think there needs to be always space for local knowledges. So I think both is true. I'm really happy that across Finland, we have a national curriculum. I also really am worried that we have a national curriculum. So I think these are both true.
Yeah. Yeah, I could continue that the other chapter that I'm writing in the book is about the local comprehensive education and the policies that are local. And the curricula is core curricula, so it gives only the broad sense of curricula. And we could use the kind of local models of curricula, school curricula, but also, like, I don't know, local, municipal, whatever, like something that takes place within in the local surroundings. And I know, like, for instance, if we talk about Helsinki as the one city, the schools are really different within one city. So I think that we need to address these issues at the schools also, and do and work with the school's own curricula, but also other documents that they have, not only curriculum, but that's one. And we don't use that option that much because we can have local modifications for the curricula. So I think also that that is the key issue here.
Would anyone in the audience like to continue? Oh, I see a hand up. Yep.
Thank you very much, Ratia Diputri from University of Jyväskylä. Thank you very much for your book. I actually write myself about Finnish education system from Indonesian perspective. And I think this is the book you have. It's really like showing all, which I think is a bit expert. Like, I think I read, so thank you so much for sharing this. And you are giving also, I think on the last chapter saying about this foundation of critical studies, if I'm not mistaken, and what we can take from the Finnish education, for example, the equality and equity. But I also, as a minority here in Jyväskylä, I also get this benefit from the Kiva Koulu, for example, how this anti-bullying program in Jyväskylä has been tested in a way. And also, I remember what Kara mentioned, the early mentioning something about this, why Finnish is being always seen. This is also the thing that I've been asked by the editor, can you write something about Finnish education? Just why? For me, it's like we should be have a unique system in our own country. But the thing is, like it or not, Finland have this kind of, you know, better system in the, like this assessment PISA and how this small country can survive, can thrive. And like it or not, we know, at least in Indonesia, we know about Pasi Salberg book, more like Finnish lesson has been, you know, being published, like edited from many times. And I think, I hope this book can be also been translated in Indonesian language, because this is like what you said about the social justice, about environment, about pedagogy. That's sort of like more advanced than what we have, like struggling in the middle income countries, how to get access of quality education. So I guess this, I think it probably the from SDG4 seminar and also from University of Jyväskylä, we can always been discussing about this, so can be also some kind of known in other countries. Thank you.
Did anyone want to further comment on this?
I think some of what you were saying resonated with me in the sense that this Finnish famous education system, and as someone who's been involved with student admissions for the last few years for the international master's degree program in our faculty, I have read hundreds of applications where applicants describe their motivation for the program as simply, Finland has the best education system in the world, and that's why I'm applying to this program.
Okay.
And so I think this is something that came up. I see Hannah's ready to say something. This is something that came up, I think, in your article with your co-authors as well. You talked about myths, or maybe you wanted to expand on something else there.
No, I just wanted to, okay, everybody say it with me. Finland does not have the best education system. You know, say it honestly. That's the book in a sentence. Do I have to say more? No, that's it. That's the book.
So coming back to the, sorry, can I already ask the question?
Yeah.
Yeah. coming back to the previous conversation about incorporating local knowledge into curriculum, I was wondering how is it done for now? Because so recently I've been browsing different job vacancies, and I noticed a job vacancy for a cultural specialist. So it's basically in marketing and like global corporation. And let's say that they need to promote a content that appeals to Polish people that they live in United Kingdom, and they hire some Polish people who lived in UK for some time to understand, you know, how it can be tailored to local sort of national norms in this way. And I was wondering whether we could take inspiration from that in any way. What are your thoughts?
For a cultural specialist to emerge.
You.
I'm just touching the mic to say that I don't really know what. I think the local curricula is an interesting idea. I really don't have an answer to your question. I'm sorry, but I'm just going on about the idea of the local curricula, and I think that's interesting. But I think it's also established that a lot of the things that go on in Finnish schools are done based on textbooks, that they textbooks are a really strong sort of replacement for curricula. So you might have the local curriculum, the local implementations, but in the end, it's the textbooks that very much, I wouldn't say dictate, but very much influence what goes on in classrooms. And those are not local. They are very much national and also commercial. So I think that's one of the things that comes to my mind about this. It's a bit of a contradiction with the local curricula.
When I interviewed teachers, there were several types of teachers. Somebody said that the curriculum is the main document for them. Mm-hmm. And some of them said that we don't look at it at all. We just don't. So books are really important too. And about this local curriculum and the national curriculum, my studies were on Tampere region. And there is this national curriculum, and then they make some statements on the local level, on the area, and then in the Tampere, and then at the school too. So there are several levels, and when I looked at this sustainability, ecological sustainability, it kind of fades on every state. And for example, in Tampere region, this ecological sustainability, they say stated really strongly also there that there should be this area in teaching. But when you look at those local curriculums of the schools, they forget it. So it's only one or two schools that take it there. But you must know that every school must obey this national curriculum, and then there is this document, and then they add like a little piece to that, like levels. So everybody has this national one, and then they add a bit in the local settings.
So I think where local curricula can be really useful is to see structures of power and oppression in the individual institutions or communities, right? So for example, if we define, okay, like we want our students to understand structural racism or as a, not just as an individual act, but as a system. And then we break this down and we think about, okay, so now in our community, this is mostly relevant for, I don't know, Romanis or migrant kids or, I don't know, you name it, whatever is the locally relevant context for this. And then I think the important thing would be that the kids understand the local histories, the local contexts, but that they can tie it to some larger social phenomena and processes and histories, right? And so in that sense, for me, those two are also not completely separate, right? That the local and the national are always kind of they always interact. But I think we need both, but not as two opposing forces, but as like one helps us understand the other better. And so in that sense, yes and yes.
Okay, we have a couple of questions.
Hey, thank you. I guess my first reaction to what you said about the system not being perfect or the best was kind of relief. But then I also wanted to criticize that feeling I had, or like this first reaction, because I think it's also from a privileged position that us, we come here, and then we say, no, it's not the best. We're humble. Because I think that saying or that what make us laugh can also be decontextualized for very bad purposes. So I think that I was just thinking that it's a bit sour to come here and to not celebrate what's there to be celebrated and across time. And then I think there are lessons to be learned and thought and spread, but yeah, so I don't know. Yeah. Maybe we could kind of at least a lesson to myself to not discontextualize that and say, oh yeah, it's not good. It's not, you know, because it is. And for example, I guess when I think about where I come from and our system back home and Finland, I think the lesson to be learned is about the public centeredness of the system. And I guess in that sense, it's a case to be explored and to be thought. So system being majorly public, then I guess this experience can give us evidence or suggest evidence back home. And then we negotiate and we work on our rhetorics. But yeah, I'm not saying it's the best. I'm not saying it's yeah. I'm not saying we should try to find the best one, but that statement also felt kind of the privilege of the best at the end. So even in kind of this we here in this system we do have both the privilege of saying that we are the best or that some people say we are the best, but at the same time we have the privilege to be humble and say, oh no, but it's not that much. So yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to spice up also like the discussion.
Good job.
Thank you.
No, I think you're completely right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, also agreeing, you're right. And I had a situation in a classroom 10 years ago. I was teaching an international master's class, and I was basically saying a lot of the same things that we're talking about today. And a student came up to me and said that, do you know that in my home country, about 30% of the schools have roofs, which was a really welcome wake-up call for me. So I think it's also really important that we also know that we are bitching about our system from a privileged position. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I think you're completely right in calling this out. I think where I see the risk that I'm actually very, I was also a bit spicy, I guess, earlier. But I think where I'm very serious is I think that the way Finland has sold and commodified its education system, I think is not healthy. And I am not good and doesn't help always social justice. And the other thing I think is that in some ways, these PISA, how do I say this? PISA happiness, is that a thing? Like that has made people complacent and has made us reluctant to change things. And that has sometimes been good because maybe Finland hasn't adopted some of the things that are really common in other countries, like high-stakes standardized testing, for example. Because they were like, okay, well, some things are working here, so should we maybe leave it as is? But in some ways, this has also been a problem because we haven't seen a lot of need for change because it's working great, right? We're always winning PISA. But also, like, I think PISA is like, okay, yeah, let's take that. PISA is like if we base all our happiness on PISA, then I think that's a very small thing to base it on, right? So I think we need to hear a lot more than that. We need to hear the stories of the people who are actually in the system and going through it and experiencing it. And those stories are not gonna sign the paper that says Finland is the best, I think. So that's, I think we need to be a bit more nuanced in our evaluation. But I do agree. You are totally right in calling us out on our privileged position here, saying like, "Well," but to be fair, I'm not trying to be humble. I'm just I'm trying to be critical.
I think Nina wanted to add something, and then Taina.
Can I just quickly add something to what Hannah just, because it's directly related. I think also the thing with PISA is that we don't really know why we did so well in PISA. Mm. I think it was a complete surprise to Finns 20 years ago. And after that, we were like, can't do anything about this now because so we don't mess it up.
Can we just add something? Then it's related to this.
Okay.
I actually want also to spice up a bit because I do agree with Victor, but I also feel like this is the first time I hear somebody say Finland is not the best system in the world, because when we had recently a course and everything was say, like, I'm a early child education in Finland. I study here. And I have been here in this course. Everything was so perfect. And there were not any like all the negative side that I've seen in the school myself, they were not mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I also think that it's also in between. We do have a lot of good system here, good facilities, but there are problems and we need to talk about that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In my project now, we are talking about sustainability competencies, and we have Romania, Portugal, Spain, and Finland in that project. And it is true that in Finland, we are very privileged because they are talking about are the walls broken or is there any windows in the school building and is there big leaks in the water pipes. So we have this infra is good, and then we could focus on something more, something else than the infra. And in this project, these southern European countries are focusing in this infra mainly, and that's why we have some contradictions between them in this. But in all of these countries, kind of engagement in these things comes through. We are different in somehow we are privileged in Finland, but this engagement is something, engagement in sustainability is something that is problem in all of these countries.
Okay, we have a question from the top.
So thanks for having the mic, and I'm Nicholas, and I feel like the education in Finland, it's based on a lot of things that is already well established that is not education related. For example, a functioning government, a functioning non-corrupted funding allocation system, and least like transparency, like more transparent government, and also like the free flow of information where our able critics are able to bring up to the table, or they are usually being addressed. For example, a lot of countries have faced this problem, even a lot of developed countries have tried to hide them. And I feel like this is all the prerequisite that we for, as Victor mentioned, where we criticizing one thing, we need to see it is the whole society is reached to that level of well-being or wealth yet. But also I want just very naively saying like the best is quite hard to determine what is the best. I mean, a student emotional well-being, are they having fun at school, or they are scoring well in A-levels or things like that, you know? So this is just some comment from myself. Yeah, thank you.
Hello, my name is Ia. I'm from master's degree at the University of Helsinki in changing education. I think Finnish education became very popular because of all the PISA, and maybe partly because of the Finland being the happiest country. And I think these, like when we talk about these measurements and rankings, we need to understand what these rankings are actually measuring. Like, for example, PISA, it's more about the mathematics and something that's measurable. But do they really, like, for example, measure well-being or like social, exactly, emotional, mm-hmm, skills? Maybe nowadays, I think OECD are working on social and emotional skills, but maybe it wasn't really a part of like PISA, for example. Mm-hmm. And for the happiness ranking, it's also like, what do they really measure? And is it about subject well-being? Is it about the social welfare, security? So like, I think a lot of countries are very obsessed with those rankings, and Finland happens to be really good, like ranked really well. But I think we need to really be careful with what is actually measuring and what does this ranking means to those countries and maybe to education. So maybe those things are quite vital when we think of what kind of education we want to create for our future.
I think this is an excellent point. Nothing to add, actually. I would love to see a ranking of which school makes me feel the safest, which school system. Let's see if Finland wins that one. That would be a good one.
I also think the ranking question is interesting and the whole PISA discussion is interesting. And Hanna's going to laugh at me, but I'll say this anyway. I think these kinds of rankings always confuse correlation with causation. Sorry, that's where I always go at some point. We know that Finland does well in PISA, but we don't know why. We don't know what is the cause and what is the consequence. There's a correlation, but that's all.
Okay, I can see lots of hands coming up now. As we're passing the mic, someone has mentioned online, can you talk about the happiest country measurements or make one brief comment about this? I think, in my very personal opinion, that what is being measured, for example, is not happiness but satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Can see a few people nodding, but...
Okay, so my turn?
Also, Finland is always winning the most racist country in the European Union thing. So can we talk about that also? So, and when we talk about rankings.
Not that ranking.
Not that ranking. Okay, sorry.
Okay, so my name is Xinhua Mu. I'm from China and I'm studying education for sustainability. So my question is about how sustainable education has been implemented in the Finnish curriculum. If there is one, and what improvements should be made? I know Professor, sorry, I don't remember your name, has mentioned about the lack of ecological sustainability teaching in the school, and an overemphasis of the sociological sustainability being talked a lot or researched a lot. So I would like to hear opinions and suggestions from professors, like how this has been going on, like a sustainable education, especially focusing on the climate change. Yeah, in this part perspective.
Climate change is mentioned quite not so often in curriculum, but in the general part of the basic school curriculum, it's the primary and lower secondary school, the basic school. There are in general part quite strong statements about sustainability and how about this environmental sustainability, ecological sustainability too. But when we go to the curriculum of different subjects, it isn't so strongly there. So teachers should read the general part and then implement it in the teaching. But the connection is not strong enough, I think. It's in biology and geography, these things, but I think that every subject has its own role for example, climate change. It's not only about biology and geography, it's about social things and culture and everything, how we can struggle with this problem. So it's in those some subjects, it's really, really there. Also in upper secondary school, it's the same situation. It's in some subjects, but not so in everything.
Yeah, and you just mentioned about the teacher side, about teaching. But what about the students' learning side, the evaluation?
Yeah, that's something that I would like to make research on too. So there isn't so much research on that yet in Finland.
And also because a few days ago, I was in Helsinki participating in this youth climate summit. And in one of the keynote speech speaker, she mentioned about the regression of the policy about sustainability in Finland since the coming of the new government. She also mentioned that in 2019 it was labeled as a green selection, but after 4 years, she said that it's the biggest failure about that selection. So I was thinking that if all this education could play a role in shifting the because only after 4 years. People choose a more conservative party over the Green Party and over other parties. So the education, could education be a part about sustainability in the transition or in this shifting? Yeah.
My view is yes, but answer you others.
I could just shortly add that I've been studying the multicultural issues in curricula. So if you look at the social justice or social sustainability, I think it's quite well defined in the curricula text. But then again, perhaps our teachers are not that well trained for the moment because the world is changing so fast. So our teachers have been doing their teacher training 20 or 30 years ago. So it's also a question of multicultural competence of the teachers. So, yeah.
Hi, my name is Ariana. I'm the master's student in the Changing Education Program at the University of Helsinki. So I'm probably one of those hundreds of applicants who said that I want to study Finland. But it wasn't because I thought it had the best education system, but it was addressing the very important issues like of equality and inclusion better than a lot of countries, including mine. And so I wanted to see like how they were doing it. And so I have my three children with me here. And through their stories, through their everyday life, I can see how the Finnish education system is built around a person. So it's more like the fundamentals of the society where the human plays the like critical role. And then this system is kind of like built around the human. And that also like include in my opinion, it answers the question of like why Finland is the happiest country, because it is easy to live here. And so every day we don't have to go through this like daily dilemmas and struggle, this micro stressors and like anxiousness, like anxiety of something might happen. So that kind of like makes the life much easier. So like, if you ask like, are you happy? Then yes, I am happy. So my question is like, well, all the countries are dealing with all these issues of equality, equity, inclusion, sustainability, and Finland is dealing with it in its own way. And having the critical approach to that is also kind of like the reason for progression, reason for upward movement. And probably it's also contributing towards improving further and further. The policy on inclusion is coming from. I know like this is very like how do you say that? Like scandalous. There's a word, but it just got... Yeah, it's very controversial. Mm-hmm. I've seen like many approaches, like whether the Finland is doing it like so good with the three-tier like support system, and then there's like also like this inclusion is actually like resulting exclusion. Mm-hmm. So what's your opinion on that?
Okay. Can you repeat the question?
What's your take on the inclusive education policy like in Finland? Because a lot of people are kind of like looking up to Finnish education, how they're addressing inclusive. This is one of the major goals in the SDG 4, and Finnish is also like the acting as the role model for many for many education systems.
Well, that's a long discussion if you talk about like special education and the three-tier system that we have. And I think that for the moment, we have been having a huge discussion in the public about this kind of special education and need students within the comprehensive education and general classes. And I think that there is a lot of misunderstandings, and there's also a lot of lacking of resources. Like, we have been implementing a new program, a new three-tier system, but we don't have the tools to do it as it is supposed to be done. So in that way, I think that we are critical for it, and we need to be, but it's not used that it's supposed to be done. Like, we don't have, like, municipalities are using the new program perhaps to cut to costs, so it's not working as it should. So I don't know if I answer your question, but it's a constant debate at the moment. Like, it's really heated discussion. Yeah.
I think we have one last question up the back. One last comment up the back, and then we might finish up.
So thanks, Olli-Pekka from the University of Helsinki. And so I think this, as you mentioned, this inclusive education and how the three-tier system of support works is kind of a heated topic, and it's an ongoing topic. Like, I did my master's on inclusion, and it was debated 20 years ago. It debated still. It's also surprising that how little also the Finnish schools know how other schools are doing. Like, last week I was giving a professional development instructing professional development for schools who want to develop their inclusive practices. And there's always some schools who may say that it's impossible, it cannot be done. And then they're in the same train, there's schools who actually, we have done it already 20 years and it's working really well. I think we know how to do it. It's not perfect, but we've been developing all the time. We should avoid those kind of a black and white statements like inclusion is impossible, or because I know it's working in some places. In some places it's not working, and in some places working because of different reasons, and in some places it's not working because of certain reasons. So just this kind of a everyday observation and. Kind of having listened to discussion for 20 plus years almost now, I think it's just maybe my advice would be that kind of evaluate where you are at the moment and then start doing things and gradually things will develop, but it takes time. Like I discussed with an experienced principal whose school has been kind of developing their inclusive practices for 25 years. Now, and he said that now I think we are in a kind of a point where when we know what we are doing, but unfortunately the school is located in city of Jyväskylä, who is now laying off some teachers and teaching assistants. So the principal also said that we are not sure if it will work the next year when we have experienced the layoff. So of course it's a constant struggle and development.
Thank you for this. And before we break for coffee, which I think is an essential part of the Finnish education system, could I have from the panel, if possible, one word to summarize this massive, massive topic? And the second part of our seminar, we have this idea of imagining the future. What's the future of Finnish education, of Finnish teacher education going to be? One, two words, three words.
Oh, wait, three?
Three words.
Oh, God.
My word is recognition.
Recognition, great.
I want to say hope.
Hope.
What are you going to say after that?
Remember ecological sustainability.
I will say one of my favorite things about the Finnish education system: free food for everybody.
Thank you so much to all of our panelists and to all of the audience who contributed to the discussion. If we can just give everyone a round of applause again.